I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
On this week's episode of Unwritten.
What is going on between Hayward and Bumgarner here?
After he struck out looking, he said something to Bumgarner.
Sonny Gray walking off the mound and having a few words, it looks like, with Anthony Rizzo.
Joey Votto is barking at, he's barking at somebody. I think he's barking at the pitcher.
Hello and welcome to Unwritten from Odyssey and Major League Baseball. We're going behind baseball's secret rules to define them, explore their history, and decide their place in the game today. My name is Ron Darling. I'm with Jimmy Rollins. Today we're talking about something that Jimmy is an expert in, trash talk. Or I think he is, anyway. What's fair game for MLB players, talking smack, and what's over the line? Jimmy, you're the perfect guy to break this down with, I think. I'm assuming, because you're known as one of the league's best trash talkers during your career. And you backed it up, though, every single time. That's what I loved about you. So tell us, was there anyone who could keep up with you during your generation of playing trash talking?
Easy call.
Oh, easy.
Brandon Phillips.
Really?
What? I mean, that dude talked trash. You know who else used to talk trash? Ken Griffey Jr., he talked a lot of trash.
He did talk a lot of trash.
Yes, he did. And it was just on the under. You know, you'd be real close and he'd say some stuff to you. And you look like, hold on, you talking to me? And he'd be laughing and walking away. But for me, you know, it wasn't about just talking trash. It was, how can I get a leg up? And, you know, and talking trash in baseball isn't the traditional talking trash. And, you know, like in basketball, I'm a cross you over and, you know, dunk on you and you start tapping the head or you point at guys and stuff like that. You know, you just, the culture of baseball just doesn't allow that. So for me, it was always psychological. You know, how can I get into your head without you even knowing it? And, you know, and I used to read books. Not on trash talking, just about how the mind works and how you're in a zone and what gets you out of a zone. So, you know, when we're especially when we're playing the Mets, you know, and David Wright, he did a pretty good job, you know, rejecting me. I have to be honest. For the most part, you know, he'd be on fire and it was like double home run, double. It's just like, bro, you're wearing us out. And he get the second. I'm befriending him. Hey, you know, knowing we don't like each other at the time. Hey man, what are you doing? Like you're just so locked in. Like, what's different? I saw you last week, and now and this week you're just on fire. And same thing with Reyes when he get there, or try to do it to Delgado.
Yeah,
because I wanted them to think about what they were doing, and I wanted them to come up to the plate the next time and look at me, and I'm up there looking like I'm studying, like I'm trying to figure it out.
Yeah, yeah.
So now they feel like they're putting on a show. The last thing they're doing is thinking about hitting the baseball. I want them to, you know, worry about, you know, how do I do that again? And how do I get the second base again so he can ask me, or maybe I can tell him that time. And if that works, I got into your head. And it wasn't the traditional trash talk of, you know, saying this or that, and I'm better than you, or challenge this or that. It was, psychological trash talk. How can I get in your head? In 07, you know, saying we're the team to beat. And for real, that wasn't really talking trash. I felt that in my heart. That's and, great. You know, from the other side, you know, Jimmy's crazy and this and that. And, you know, maybe they were right. Maybe I was crazy. Maybe I am a little bit crazy. Everybody got a little cuckoo in me, especially when you play baseball.
100%.
And, you know, at the end of the year, when they started losing, what I felt is that now they were having to answer their own questions.
Yeah,
I didn't have to answer them anymore. I said what I said. And coming from the Bay Area, it's one thing I learned from my mom also. I'm going to say something. It's up to you, not me.
Yeah.
I don't have to prove anything. It's up to you to make sure that I don't get it done.
Yeah.
And if I don't get it done, then it's like, okay, well, I'll try it again next time. And I was just talking trash. But the moment I get it done, now you know you're really going to hear it. So how much more pressure does that put on you to make sure you make sure that I don't get done what I said is going to happen, or I don't win, that you have to win now. You have to do everything. That puts a lot of pressure. So for me, I went about it that way. I want to put the pressure on you. I told you what I'm going to do. I told you what's going to happen. I want you to prove me wrong. And I think a lot of guys didn't really understand that. It was, you know, having to answer questions. And, you know, we heard, you know, just how that other locker room was at the end, you know, they're dodging media.
That's right.
Because now it's like, well, you know, what's happening? You know, this was said, Jimmy said they're the team to beat, and they're riding your heels. They came in to Philly in September. We took four straight, and now the lead was down to three. Now they're having to deal with, are you guys going to let this happen? That's a lot of pressure in the clubhouse. And it lasted for, you know, a number of years. Another way I used to talk trash is, hey, me versus you tonight at the plate.
Oh, nice.
Me versus you, you know, and it was, once again, it was a little challenge. Just now, because I know what I'm doing.
So it's a whether personal I get hits, wager.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Whether I get hits or not, that's cool. My job is to make sure to get you out of your game. Now, some guys locked in. It's like, ooh, that didn't work today. You know what I'm saying?
That's
that didn't work.
Right.
You know, but a lot of times you will see, you know, a guy go from hot to thinking about it. My job is done. I did my, like, you better get him out, because I could see him wavering a little bit. All you have to do is execute. And then, you know, it goes from, you know, one for three that night to 0-4 the next night. And a week later, they're still struggling. It's like, dang. Oh, well, our advantage.
Hey, think about this way. This is how good Jimmy Rollins is. The Mets were 7-up. With 17 to play. 7-up with 17 to play. And the Phillies came back on him. Give me some Brandon Phillip-isms.
Brandon Phillips last night made some comments about the Cardinals, saying he hates the Cardinals, and used some less than family language in his descriptions. And as soon as Brandon got to the plate, Yadier Molina got in his face.
Oh, some isms?
Like some of his trash talk.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, you get the second base. You know, first thing he does is make sure he lets me know that I'm much shorter than he is. You know, you come up to me walking sideways, come with that little swag, that ATL swag. What's up, shawty? You know, it's like, man, you know, you kind of dirty, Jay. What's up with them shoes, man? You know, like they didn't polish your stuff off. And you look down, he's pristine because it's early in the game and he hasn't gotten any dirt on his clothes yet. Ah, shit, man. You know, I'm just out here trying to do my thing. And then go make a great play and come back the next inning, or, you know, hold you at second base as if nothing just happened. Like, man, how come if you would have ran, I wouldn't have thrown you out. I would have went the first, just got you out anyway. You looking at him like, bro, I'm not falling for that. Like, I already know what you're trying to do. You're trying to get me to make a bad baseball play. So, but it was his swag and the way he did it. And he's kind of just kind of looked at you, not disrespectfully, but like, you know, I'm better than you. You know, I look better than you. You know, I'm gonna make this play. I'm gonna catch the ball, bounce to the shortstop, and it's gonna make a highlight play. And there's nothing you guys could do about it. And it made you want to just like, I want to hit the ball by you. Like, I want you to take a little bit too much time and I beat it out and it just get under your skin. But you had to respect it because the man went out there and that glove work was impeccable. And how many times, and this is the one time I love, because he's got me for so many hits. And it's just like, dude, like, why are you even playing in that position? And he throw you out and just look at you like, and point to the dugout like they made me do it. Like, no, I saw you shift on your own. Like, yeah. Don't try to point to them. But he finally hit one ball to me. This was in, I think I may have been in LA at the time. And I went to my right, dove and threw him out. And it felt so good. It was like, for all those hits you took away from me, you know, and all the times you came over to second base. And I'm like, man, this dude, you know, and he clean hit and he hit the home run. And we know Brandon, he hit the home run. And they'll do the interview after the game. And he's my favorite quote of his. And if I was a pitcher, I'd have been like, I can't wait to face you again. He said, I got every stitch of that ball. You know, he hits it and he gets a long look. And you come in and interview and he's laughing, he's smiling. And he says, I got every stitch of that ball. Ooh, that's cold.
It is cold.
That's a cold piece. Ron, a batter tells you that. You know, you hear the interview after the game or a reporter comes over and is like, such and such said he got every stitch of that ball. How do you feel?
Oh, I mean, my first reaction is I'm thinking of the math. Okay, can I say to him, check the book? Because if I have really good numbers against him, I can say, whatever, just check the book. Mm-hmm. Or if I don't, if he owns me, then I just got to take it. I mean, I got to just take it. I mean, because, you know, the whole thing about pitching is that if you don't want that to happen, pitch better, you know, right. And start pitching better quicker, you know, all that stuff. I was thinking about as he's trying to get on your height at second base, we had a fight in the minor leagues because we had a second baseman and guy slid into him kind of hard on a steal attempt. And they were talking to each other, and he said to him, you're going to have to stand on the bag because I can't hear a word you're saying unless you stand up on that bag. That's when they went at it, whatever. But you know what I'm thinking today, the trash talking? Players sometimes will do it with fans. I mean, it's unique, right? At the end of your career, mm-hmm. you were starting to get into how important social media was going to be in all of sports. But I see players today occasionally, or I'll see on Twitter how they've gone back and forth with each other.
Yeah.
Some players enjoy like the back and forth with, I call it the rage of the inarticulate. Those folks who just are angry all day and just want to pick out ball players to try to get them angrier.
And that's the generation, you know, yeah. the generational difference. When I first came up, Doug Glanville got to me early. Cool. And it was like, you know, the papers are always in the clubhouse, you know, and then it was papers. Today it's right there on your phone.
That's right.
And he was like, and don't read it. Don't look at it. Don't pay it any attention because they have a job. Their job is to sell the papers on talk radio. Their job is to increase their listeners. The more listeners, the more ads they get, the more revenue the company makes. That is their job. Your job is to go play baseball.
That's right.
You know what happens. You know what you said. You know what you didn't say. And you come to the field the next day and you do it again. So I blocked all that stuff out. You know, newspapers would sit there and I just lift it up, put it somewhere else. Like, I don't even want to be tempted with that. Now, today's society, your phone is in your hand all the time. These kids' phones are in their hands. They're playing video games and, you know, everything's on a phone. So it's easy to go to Instagram, it's easy to go to Twitter, it's easy to go to Facebook and, you know, whatever else is out there and read and see everything that's being said about you. And it's a public forum where back when you were playing, I was playing, it was local. It was in your local papers on a local radio and that was it. But now someone's taking a shot at you publicly. It's tough, but you have to just look, whatever. Who cares? And there are times, don't get me wrong, where I've checked Twitter and people have said something and I'll respond, but I want to respond in a debate form. Like, okay, I hear what you're saying, you know, and maybe ask, you know, why? And then you break down, like I said, the anger and you know, the the people who aren't too articulate and just expressing their anger and their thoughts. Well, that's fine. But give me the root to it. You know, give me the reason. What is the root of your opinion? And, you know, when one or two, you know, back and forth, it's like, oh, okay. And look, it's kind of like the heckler in the stands, right?
Oh, right. Look,
you address them, and then they go away. The more you ignore them, the more they're going to keep going because they want that attention.
That's right.
So fine, I'll give you a little bit of attention. And once you do that, they leave you alone. they changed their opinion about you, or you know, at some point they may still have an opinion about you, but now they're going to learn to articulate what they say instead of the anger or disgust, whatever it is they're feeling, you know, when they're taking a shot at you.
My favorite comeback to the angry white guy, 35 and older, was always the same. Please have your wife stop calling my hotel room. That would always shut them up. Always, always. Just had to do that once. You know, you alluded to getting under the Mets skin, and we already addressed 2007 when you guys came back. But I remember 2008, Carlos Beltran. Beltran had some things to say, and then you accused him of plagiarism. I remember after that year, Cole Hamels called him choke artist. I mean, the back and forth between, and the only reason there was a back and forth because you both were real good, but you guys were in your prime.
And that was funny because I remember, that 2008 Mets went and got Frankie Rodriguez.
That's right.
Who was the dominant, closer. And that was a big part of their failures coming down the stretch. You know, they'd have leads and get to the bullpen. And next thing you know, they're down by three runs. And now we have the stopgap that we need. And, you know, besides Mariano, the other person you wanted was Frankie. We had Billy. Brad Lidge. So we had guys that we felt can do the job, but it was like, well, if you look at, their losses, the only thing that they were missing was a dominant closer. And now they got this dominant closer. So yeah, Beltran's like, two Jimmy Rollins in particular, we're the team to beat. And I start laughing because I'm like, it doesn't work against me. And that let me know right there, Ron, right there, the pressure that was put on them from the beginning of the season, they were running through the season.
Yeah.
But they didn't finish it out. When things fell apart, now they're having to answer that question of, are you guys really going to let this happen? Yeah. Jimmy said they're the team to beat. Their fate, they beat us early in the year. Coming down a stretch, we whooped them up pretty good.
Yeah.
And now you're losing it all. So every year after that, from 2007, it was always that question. Are you guys going to live up to, us, the Phillies, beating the Mets, winning the division, and the Mets live up to, all the stuff that you said in response? Because so far, you haven't been able to do that. And, like I said, 2008, that for sure proved my point that I was in their head, we were in their head. The city of Philadelphia was in the city of New York's heads because of what happened. So it has a lasting effect. Talking trash at the moment, I'm about to dunk on your play, that's one thing. But the psychological effect that it has on the team, like every time they walk into that clubhouse when they're facing us, they want to beat us that much more. They want to disprove, what I said. And how did that work out? And for them, it didn't work out too well. Although, they had a run, a lot later in 15 that they got to the World Series. But during that time, that's what it was all about. It was, we became the NL's version, NLE's version of the of Boston, New York. You already have the Giants and Dodgers out west, but that had been missing in the NL East. You had the AL East, that's historic, but that had been missing for a while, I felt, because the Braves won. They were just beating everybody, so there was really no rivalry. So the rivalry became after the 06 Mets beat the Braves and knocked them off. It's like, shoot, well, it's the Wild West now. It's up for grabs, and I'm claiming it.
Very nice. I was thinking because of your age that you had to like those Oakland A's teams. Ricky probably had to be one of your favorite players. But yes, I played with Dennis Eckersley.
I saw you play.
You did.
Yeah. I sat in the stands.
I used to play with Dennis Eckersley, who one of the great closers of all time. But what I love is he, to me, was the first time that I had ever seen a pitcher that would just talk trash on the mound with his actions. I mean, you could hear it from our bench sometimes because, in Oakland, poor Oakland, they'd have some great teams, but they'd have like 15,000. They would never have the, except for the playoffs. So he would strike out George Brett. He'd point at him. He'd snap his finger and say, go sit down. Like that, all of that would happen in a really quick time. And I was just thinking that what if Dennis Eckersley was facing Jimmy Rollins and told him to go sit down. Would you have any words for him?
No.
He didn't?
No, I wouldn't, because I already know what he's trying to do.
Yeah.
He's trying to get me pumped up for the next night he comes in. Now I'm really going to try even harder. I take note of it, and it's like, all right, good one. You know, look, you won. You're right. You won. Period. There's nothing I could do about it. Go sit down. All right, cool. When I see you tomorrow night, you know, I'm like the guy just hanging out in the weeds waiting for you to come across my path.
Yeah.
And when I get you, I'm going to make sure you know I got you. And that's how it goes. It's fair and square. It's nothing personal. You did your job. I know what you're trying to do also. It's not going to happen. And even if it does, I'm not going to let you see that you're getting under my skin. I may go in the clubhouse and, you know, say something, but I am not going to outwardly let you know that you won. Because when I do that, now I'm getting in my own head, because now the world sees there's this confrontation between us two. And it's me versus you. And I don't mind. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
I talk trash. Look, I'll stand up to the challenge, but I'm going to do it a little differently, because what you're doing is what I do. I'm not going to let you win my game, you know? So, and that becomes a game within a game. And I remember going to those games and, you know, he strikes you out and he gives that fist pump and he's screaming at you. Ah, it's like being an A's fan. I loved it.
Of course.
But you know, being on the opposite side of it. All right. You just taught me
something. To be a good trash talker, you got to be able to take it. So you got to give it, but you got to be able to take it. That's the only way you become a good trash talker. That's pretty funny.
Yep.
Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
It's a clown. Golly, no shame. No shame. Like, it's 7-1. You hear your third homer of the year, you act like Barry Bonds breaking the record. I'm the old grumpy guy, I know, but that type of stuff didn't used to happen. Now it's ridiculous.
As games change, and one of the best pitchers of his generation, Madison Bumgarner, he is on that rock He might be the last guy on that rock of not wanting hitters to show him up when they hit a home run, right? Remember, remember Max Muncy hit it, you know, in McCovey's Cove. And then when Madison got mad at him, Max Muncy said, okay, if he doesn't like it so much, tell him to throw it in the ocean. Well, it's not the ocean, it was the bay, but that's all right too.
Right.
But just recently, Victor Robles hit a home run off him.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to hear Mad Bum. He's like, you know, this guy's celebrating. He's losing by 8 runs. He's hit 3 home runs in the year. So he did exactly what he wanted to do. He wanted to let everyone know that I'm winning. I'm pitching a winning ball game. We're killing them. And that Victor Robles only has 3 home runs in the year.
Right.
So in one fell swoop, he just devastated. But I thought the greatest comeback of all time is the next day Robles.
With the clown nose.
He wore a clown nose because Bumgarner had called him a clown.
Clown, exactly.
So I think Victor Robles has a future as a trash talker.
Is what I'm hearing true? Is Victor Robles wearing a clown nose in the dugout? Oh, my gosh, that is awesome.
Oh, definitely. And that is the best thing to do. Take what, you know, someone is thinking as talking down on you or putting you in a bad place and accepting it, taking it wholeheartedly and being that, and you letting them know, hey, it's almost like the whatever, like, just, you know, I'm going to give you what you want. As a matter of fact, I'm going to give you what you want, because after the game or at some point, that person now is going to have to answer to that again. So what did you think about, you know, Victor Robles wearing a clown nose? Keeping it alive. Now it's back to you, and I'm going off to the next city, and you're stuck with that. Now next time we see each other, you know what's on. I'm in the cage. I mean, I'm in the box. You're on the mound, and it's battle royale. And if I get you, I'm going to clown again.
That's great.
And the more success I have, I'm going to use what you said against you. So part of trash talking is, yes, being able to accept it, being able to respond in a way that makes this other person not want to do it again. And if they keep going, then you know what, then the game keeps going forward. And that's the beauty of it. And when it's done correctly, it's like a dance. You know,
yeah.
I say something, they say something, I say something, and it keeps it alive. And as long as it doesn't get disrespectful, I think it's a great thing.
So Jimmy, I played against a guy that caught for the Pittsburgh Pirates called Tony Pena. You probably met Tony in your travels. He always had a lot to say. You'd get up,
a lot. I love Tony.
I love him too. He's one of the best. You'd get up to the plate. He would spit tobacco on your shoe. He would say his trash talking to the pitcher would be, "I don't know how I'm gonna hit you, man. You're so good tonight. Your stuff is popping." You know, he'd be saying that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And get you going. But he was one of the greatest. But I think first basemen sometimes can talk a lot of trash because they're bored over there. But I think the pitcher catcher hitter dynamic is pretty good, especially how hitters can irritate pitchers, but also how hitters and catchers have their own kind of deal, because you'll see a pitch thrown to you and you know it's a ball, and the catcher will be like, "Oh, come on, we got to have that pitch," and the first thing you want to say is like, that's not a strike, man, what are you talking about? Explain some of the things that go on in that batter's box.
That happens all the time. And, you know, catchers are trying to steal strikes for their pitcher, or they're trying to expand the strike zone, you know, just working the umpire. And as a batter, you know, once or twice, you're like, not even twice. Once you're like, okay. All right, that was pretty close, but come on, you know, and the catcher say something and you're going to say something back like, nah, it was a ball. It was down. It was up. It was out, et cetera. And for the most part, the catchers ignore you because that's their job. They want to say something to the umpire. They want you to hear that they're working the umpire, and they want you to say something to them because they want to break your focus on, you know, worrying about the strike zone as opposed to trying to get a hit. But there are times where it definitely goes back and forth. And, you know, we talked about, you know, that dude BP, you know, his incident with Yadi before he even stepped into the plate. You know, there's a history there.
That's right.
And, you know, before a pitch is even thrown, we're getting a bench clearing incident. You know what I'm saying? And
that's
part of it. Batters and catchers, you know, there's a level of respect, but, you know, this guy is doing a job. And if the umpire calls it a ball as a hitter, That's it. Let it be a ball.
That's right.
I don't need you begging. I don't need you asking the umpire to expand or get a guy a strike. Hitting is tough enough as it is. And the last thing I need for you to do is say something. And there are times, you know, and who was very good at that, and it was sneaky good. I mean, one of the greatest framers in my era was Russell. Oh, I can't think.
Pittsburgh and the Dodgers. Russell Martin.
Yes.
Russell Martin.
Yeah. So I was thinking Westbrook. I'm like, man, no. Russell Martin. He was the best at it. I mean, he would frame the hell out of the ball.
Yeah.
And he would make you at times think it was a strike. And I'd probably call it a ball. He's like, oof, oh, man. All right. You know, just, you know, he wouldn't always say something. He just kind of frame it, tilt his head to the side, kind of like, and throw it back. And you know the umpire's hearing that. And that's the one time you can get away with it. It's like, okay,
yeah,
that was a good pitch. And I know I probably got away with one, or at least he thinks that. And he didn't say much. So the umpire now is really thinking, did I miss it? He's upset, but he didn't show me up. Now if he throws it again and Russell frames it the same way, the umpire calls it a strike. Now I have to say something back, like, come on now, like, you can't let him do that to you. You know, like, you called it right the first time. This isn't 50-50. One time it's the ball, one time it's a strike.
That's right.
Because with two strikes, which 50 am I on? Am I on the strike side or on the ball side?
That's right.
So, I mean, that was one thing. And he was one that was real good. Jonathan LaCroix was actually another good framer.
Oh,
and he would work the umpires. But for some reason, it's the way he did it. He didn't allow you to really talk trash to him back. It was like he'd have a conversation with the umpire about it. And it was like, if I'm trying to listen to the conversation, he's down there calling pitches, you know, he's calling pitches and still talk to the umpire about the ball and strike. You can't do it all.
Yeah.
But he was great at working umpires, and I hated it because it's like with two strikes, he made you expand the zone because you knew how good he was at framing. You knew he was back there working that umpire. So guys like that, before your first bat, it's like, hey, don't let him work you today. You know, you have to come in already. You have to be preemptive. Strike first. Because if you let it get into the game and he's putting his fingers down while talking to the umpire, you can't talk trash and try to work, try to focus on a ball coming in. So that's a dynamic that has caused much friction. AJ Pierzynski, who would talk to everybody. He's talking to the first base umpire, the third base umpire, the second base umpire, the guy behind the plate, the batter, the pitchers, both managers. And that's who he was. So when you got to the plate, you have to really just zone him out because he's always saying something. Hey, man, you know, how you doing? How your mom doing? Everybody doing well while the pitcher's in a windup? You know, and it's like, I mean, how many guys have told AJ to shut up? Like, dude, shut up back there. Like,
we're trying to work here.
Yeah. Right. It's like, shut up. Don't talk. Don't talk to me anymore. And he stand up and he keep talking. And he wanted that confrontation because he knew he got under your skin.
Once that
happens, you're going to focus on me talking and trying to get hit. Good luck.
Yeah, I think we have to include AJ in some of our best trash talkers. How about How about things in the batter's box that you can do that irritate pitchers? What are some things?
Before you get in the batter's box, the pitchers hated this. When a batter gets in and he's digging out his little toe spot, and then he adds the hand to it. Like, hold on. So you're going to stop the game and get that comfortable in the box? Okay. All right. And, you know, and then you go old school guys like Nolan Ryan.
That's right.
Bob Gibson. You start kicking out that dirt, you better be reactionary because they're flipping you, period.
That's right.
They're letting you know.
Yeah.
You can dig out wherever you want, but that's my side of the plate. This is bad. You know?
That's right.
And then, you know, flip you. And if they hit you, they hit you.
Right.
They didn't care.
No,
they sent the message to everyone else that's come to that plate, do not dig into that box. Don't get too comfortable. So those are two things. One, you know, kicking in the dirt and then adding the hand like, no, you're going to wait until I get my toe hold before we even, get this battle going. And I didn't mind it because I understood it. And there are definitely guys that you didn't like. And you know the hand's going to come out and it's like, man, just get in the damn box.
Get in the box.
It's kind of like Bumgarner. Dude, you're hitting 205. Just get in the damn box, bro. Like, what are you kicking out? You know what I'm saying?
It is the equivalent of when you put the hand in front of someone's face and they say, did they just put their hand in front of my face? That's what it feels for a pitcher, is that not only is he digging in, but he's telling me, I'll let you know when I'm ready. That's what irritates pitchers. So that's fun.
For me, another one was pitchers couldn't stand, and with me, and I didn't get drilled much. Either I got out the way or they just didn't want to throw at me because I got on base and I was still. Is a guy that literally put his back toe on that inside edge of the box, and saying and taking a plate away from you. You know, pitchers are trained down and away.
That's right.
So I was a pull hitter, so I had to make that my advantage. That down and away was middle of the plate.
Right.
Visually to you, it's still outside corner, but the angle that I'm creating in the box is I'm making that outside middle.
Yeah.
That the middle is going to be in, and the inside corner is really, I don't know if it's a ball or strike, but I'm going to fight for that. You throw it in, I'm going to jump back and twist, and he's going to call it a strike. Hey, come on, bro. That's way inside. You know, and pitchers would get mad. It's, you know, seeing me working an umpire because they had to come in order to try to open up the outside. And my job is to push the pitcher outside by blocking the umpire off, the catcher, you know, is getting frustrated. He's like, man, he can't see, you know, like I need you to move over because you're sitting under his elbows and you can't see that pitch is a strike. And I'm like, no, that's in. No, you got it right. You know, because I want to push the pitcher out over the plate. He naturally wants to go there. But if I can take that away from him, if, you know, the next day you're getting asked, like, how did you pull that ball? I went and looked. It was down and away, and you still pulled it to right field, you know, off the wall.
Yeah.
And my answer is, I don't know. So once again, going back to trash talking, psychological, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to tell you.
No.
Period. You don't want to come in.
That's right.
If you have a two, you know, if you have a two-seamer or a cutter in, I'm dead. But you're not trained that way. You're trained to show in, get a strike in, and then get them to roll over something, you know, weak and away. So that was one thing I noticed pitchers. And John Smoltz, it was a funny. He threw a cutter. You know, I used to do very well off of Smoltz.
Yeah.
A lot of those Atlanta guys after my second year. So when I got over the fear of that, you know, this was the big three. I was like, you know what? I'm here, they're here. And I finally just like, I'm going to get hit.
Yeah.
And then I started, you know, working them pretty well, but he threw a cutter, you know, I'm on a plate. And this is when Johnny was closing. I think he may have come in to close. He was closing at this time, and he threw a cutter and it nipped my jersey, and he came running down. He's standing on a plate. That ball was over the blah, blah, blah. And I just ran down the first time. I'm like, but you hit me, Johnny. You
know, that's what I'm thinking.
And he was so frustrated. Because he knows, you know, he's a guy that threw inside.
That's right.
He threw inside. And then when he developed that cutter, he had to be able to push you off the plate and throw that four-seamer, run that two-seamer back off your hip.
Yes.
But by taking it away, he knew the margin of error, you know, shrunk for him on that ball inside.
That's right.
Because if it wasn't pushed out over the plate, the chances of the umpire seeing it weren't that well. So that was something I used my advantage to get as close as I could. One, because I'm a pool hitter.
Yeah.
Two, I understood, you know, what the pitcher's objective was. And how can I make that to my advantage? So those are things I know for sure. Like I said, you know, the digging out, then the hand in your face, talk to the hand.
That's right.
I'll let you know when I'm ready.
That's funny.
And getting as close as I can to the plate and, you know, just making you, you know, uncomfortable with throwing the ball inside, because I know how precious that inside pitch is in order to open up the other side of the plate.
One thing that will always be true is that the hitter who stands on the plate wants the ball in. Hitter who stands off the plate wants the ball away. That'll always be a truism for whatever reason.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Who is Karin Garcia? Who is Karin Garcia?
I think that Pedro Martinez, I always thought from afar, was one of the great trash talkers of all time, you know, whether it was with Kareem Garcia, who he hit, or others. But you know what's funny, and I know you work with Pedro, and I work with Pedro, getting to know him post-baseball, and of course you played with him as well, he's different off the field. He's more like Dalai Lama than a trash talker, I feel. Like, he'll still go there, but there's something more refined in him off the field.
For sure, for sure. He is a deep thinker. And, you know, you hear it when he wraps up his thoughts or is asked a question about, you know, a serious subject matter, and he can go to a deeper place. And I sit there sometimes like, man, like, you really put a lot of thought into this, like your heart and your mind and into your response. And you get to see how thoughtful, you know, he really is. And it lets you know why he was such a great pitcher. He wasn't just up there relying on talent. You know, he was thinking everything through to set up the situation, you know, to get how to get out of a situation that he was in. It wasn't just relying on a 97 mile an hour fastball and an 85 mile an hour changeup. Like, he knows he has that.
Yeah.
But how does he get you set up? And when you hear him talk, you know, pre or post game, you get to see that. Like, this dude, baseball was spiritual. It wasn't just go out there and be the best talent on the field. It was a spiritual thing. And you said it. Once he put that, when he puts that uniform on, you know, he's a clown. He's going to have fun.
That's right.
He's going to talk trash. But you put him in a suit or just sit him on a couch, you're getting a completely different person.
Wow, it's beautiful. Satchel Paige has a quote once. He was pitching against Dizzy Dean, one of the best pitchers of his generation. And Satchel would have been considered one of the best pitchers of all time if he had been relegated to only playing in the Negro Leagues. He'd been allowed to play in the Major Leagues. But he said to Dizzy Dean one night as they crossed paths on the field, he said, "I don't know what you're doing, Dizzy, but I will be here all night because I'm not giving up a run." And Dizzy Dean thought that was one of the best trash talkings of all time. Sometimes trash talking can be subtle as well. I remember Tom Seaver, the great Tom Seaver, at the end of his career, looked like he was done for the night. Pitching coach went out and asked him, "Hey, we got a guy loose, ready to go." He goes, no, I'm good. I'm good. Guy's on second and third, two outs. He walks the next hitter on four pitches. Pitching coach and the manager are like, "What is he doing?" Goes 2-0 on the next batter. Throws a changeup, ground ball to second base, out of the inning. So they come off after the inning. Seaver's toweling off. They say, "Hey, that's it, Tom. Thanks. All right, great. God, we were a little afraid there. You know, you walked, the bases loaded, and 2-0 on the next batter." He said, "Well, that's what I was doing. You know, I had to load the bases, so we had a force everywhere, and I had to get to the changeup, so I had to make sure I got to 2-0. Pitching coach walked away from there like, "I'm not worthy." I mean, this guy is thinking on a whole
right.
different level.
Right.
So there can be quiet trash talking. There can be loud trash talking. Jimmy Rollins taught us today that you got to be able to take it as well as give it. But I think one thing we learned from the unwritten rules is that trash talking is all positive. It's all good for the game. It relieves some of the boredom that sometimes can happen over 162 game schedule. And I'm proud that my partner is one of the best of all time. Odyssey, Major League Baseball, Ron Darling, Jimmy Rollins. Thanks for listening. Unwritten is a production of Odyssey and Major League Baseball. Our senior producer is Paul Aspen of Odyssey with Ian Kay of Major League Baseball. Lena Glazer is the executive producer of 2400 Sports at Odyssey. Jody Avergan and Nick Trotta of MLB are executive producers. Special thanks to everyone at Major League Baseball and Odyssey who helped make this show happen. If you enjoy the show, please leave a rating or a review in your podcast or player of choice. Or just tell someone about the show. For Jimmy Rollins, I'm Ron Darling. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back soon with more on Baseball's Unwritten Rules.